Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us today for the presentation of our half-year results. I will start with a summary of key changes we have been making over the last 6 months. Then Matthew Gregory, our new Chief Executive, will take you through our half-year period and our plans in more detail. And then we would be happy to take your questions. We have implemented clear divisional strategies across our five divisions to mobilize their considerable inherent value for the group. Overall, I am encouraged by the progress the businesses have started in delivering these strategies in the first half. Of course, as you note, we must maintain this momentum into the seasonally more important second half and beyond. The first half is usually delivering only around one-third of our annual profit. But I'm confident that with today's appointment of Matthew Gregory as Chief Executive, we have the right person to further drive the group's value mobilization strategy at pace without any delay. We conducted a thorough selection process which considered external and internal candidates. With his comprehensive knowledge of the group, his past experience and the leadership capabilities he has shown since his appointment as COO in May this year, the board unanimously concluded that Matthew is the right manager for the role. We also look forward to strengthening the board further when we welcome Steve Gunning to the board as non-executive director in January. I know Steve's extensive financial and operational experience from his 20 years at British Airways will be of immense value for the group. We are also changing our operating structure to make sure our divisions are as agile, focused, and efficient as possible to deliver for our customers. We recognize that the group's portfolio may need to evolve in future. As the conditions and opportunities in our markets change, and we take this into account as we look at our operating structure. Our main focus as we go forward is to do even more to place our customers at the heart of everything we do and everything we say. We must look at our services through the lens of the customer, not only as an operator. In addition to operational effectiveness and cost savings, we have and we are strengthening the commercial management in our division. By putting our customers first, our objective is to grow our business, build more successful partnerships with our stakeholders, all of which is key to being a business that generates consistent and sustainable value for our shareholders. I will now hand over to Matthew, who will tell you more details over the last 6 months and our plans we have in the future. Matthew, please.
Thanks, Paul. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us here today. I'm very pleased to be able to take you through a review of First Group's half-year results. I'm going to take you through the financial results, and I'll also give you further commentary on each of our divisions. For today, I'll be doing most of the talking, but I'm supported here by Rachel Baldwick, who you all know, and also Nick Chevitz, who is also taking on the interim CFO role. So overall, we're pleased to be able to report results that are in line with our expectations and consistent with those outlined at the start of the year. We've seen growth in revenue, operating profit and EPS, and have again generated cash in the period. Our growth businesses have performed well, with continued good delivery expected in the second half. And we're particularly pleased with the progress we're making in First Student, where the bid season and start-up has been strong. And First Bus, where we're combining revenue growth with cost savings to drive margin. We've also completed our strategic and operational review of Greyhound and are already implementing the necessary plans to improve this business. As you know, our business is weighted towards the second half, but this first half performance underpins our unchanged outlook for the full year. So let me take you through the headline half-year numbers to give you some more colour. Overall, the results are in line with our expectations for the first half. Total revenue grew by 22% in constant currency, and 6% when you exclude the full period effect of Southwest Rail. And the road division grew by 2%. Growth is being driven by strong performance from students and First Bus. Operating profit of £92 million grew by 9% in constant currency, and reflects improvements in the student, First Bus and transit performance, tempered by the expected decline in Greyhound profitability, with rail performing largely in line with last year. This improvement in operating profit, when combined with the reduced finance costs and lower tax rate, has driven a significant increase in EPS, up 81% in constant currency. But let's keep this in perspective, the first half EPS is a relatively small percentage of the expected full-year number. First half cash performance was positive, with £51 million of cash being generated in the first half. This is £30 million better than last year, after you exclude the impact of the £75 million working capital inflow from Southwest Rail. Again, we're pleased that the business has, for the second time, delivered cash in the first half, demonstrating that the business is able to improve cash delivery. The improving cash performance has driven the net debt to EBITDA ratio down from 1.7 times to 1.6 times, and we expect the leverage levels to continue to reduce further for the full year. So overall, this is a good performance, with the results in line with our expectations, and cash performance continuing to move forward. So moving on to the revenue bridge. I am going to run through each of the divisions in detail on the coming slides, but first let me set out the headlines. So moving from the left to the right, you can see that currency reduces revenue by 2%. Then you see that students grew by 5.5% in the first half, transit was largely flat, Greyhound declined by 1.6%, and First Bus grew by 1.3%, giving us road growth of 2%. Rail revenue was boosted by the full half-year impact of Southwest Rail, as well as changes in premiums at Great Western. Like-for-like passenger growth in rail was 5.5%. So overall, good progress in the road divisions and reasonable underlying growth in rail. Again, I'll go into more detail on operating profit with each division, but the adjusted operating profit increases from £89 million to £92 million. Currency reduces profit by £5 million, but this is more than offset by the stronger performance in all of the road divisions by Greyhound. On a constant currency basis, road margins increased by 40 basis points, and rail profits fell slightly. And with the introduction of the lower margin Southwest Rail contract, this reduces overall group margin by 30 basis points. So let me now go into detail in the divisions, and first I'll start with First Students. Revenue grew in the half for the first time for 10 years, and was up 5.5%. Now, an additional operating day versus last year contributed around 2% of this growth, so the underlying growth is around 3%. And this was largely driven by strong pricing activity, where we continue to maintain pricing discipline, achieving pricing in excess of inflation, partially offset by the closeout of the recent academic year, where our up or out pricing strategy continues to be effective in removing less profitable business. Our recent bid season has been very strong, with retention of contracts up for renewal at 92%, well in excess of the 83% we experienced last year. This strong performance has been driven by the more focused approach to the customer that I discussed in May. Retention on the whole portfolio, which is how some other people measure it, has been 97%. The strong bid season combined with new business wins from ShareShift means that for the first time in 10 years, our student business will be returning to bus growth. And growth in the bus count is a proxy for market share and indicates that our business can and will start growing again. And we continue to look to complement this with organic growth with bolt-on acquisitions, and we're pleased that we've completed the 70 bus acquisition of Pearson in Canada during the half. As you know, at this time of the year, the startup is hugely important to us, and the team has navigated this challenge very well. And this is particularly relevant in a period where location numbers at Buckhouse grew instead of declined. We still see continued challenges around driver shortages and do not see any reason for this to abate, given the strength of the US economy. But whilst we continue to work hard with dealing with the driver shortages, our strong pricing action allows us to counteract this challenge, at least from a financial perspective. Overall, student margins have increased by 160 basis points, but since the first half is such a small percentage of the year's profit, we don't read too much into this. And of course, we don't know what weather is going to hit us in the second half. However, the strong bid season, pricing, and start-up gives us good reason to believe that the full-year margins will be back to the mid-90% level this year, and this will give us industry-leading margins, befitting our position as the market leader in this sector. Now, as we go through each of the divisions, I want to take the opportunity to describe some of the exciting commercial activities that we're progressing. In students, we're seeking to leverage our market leadership to grow, largely through new technological innovations. FirstView allows parents to track the bus that their child is travelling on, and this app is already available in 75 districts and is being used by 35,000 parents. We've then introduced FirstAct, which is a conduct tracking website, which simplifies the process for reporting, tracking and analysing any student conduct issues. This has been launched this year, and we look forward to supplementing this with other transportation solution services. And finally, we shouldn't forget the charter business, which is approximately 10% of our revenue, and this allows us to provide additional services to both school districts and consumers, giving us better utilisation from our fleet. Moving on to transit. Overall, the revenue performance is largely flat, and that masks the underlying activity in the business. The loss of business in the Canadian all-term space that was referenced in May has been offset by inflationary pricing and contract wins in the fixed route and paratransit sectors. But overall, retention continues to be strong at 96%. The improvement in the transit margin has been largely driven by the absence of last year's hurricane impact of around $6 million. Actual margins were more in line with the guidance we gave in the full year update, with the loss of two higher margin all-term contracts having previously been reflected in that outlook. Driver shortages continue to affect this business, and we're working hard to offset the impact of this. The business retains its market-leading position in its existing sectors, and I remain comfortable with our guidance of mid-5% margins in the transit business. Now, when we're talking about transit, we've highlighted in the past that this division is the one where we see most opportunities with respect to disruption, and this is the division where we're positioning ourselves to understand and be part of any changes in the marketplace. So let's look at some of the core areas of expansion for transit business. We're working with a number of shared autonomous vehicle initiatives, or SAVs as they're known, to trial and test the demand for this innovation. We're also working with stakeholders with the goal of launching the first UK trial of SAVs on public roads near Didcot. We're currently providing shuttle services for more than 30 university campuses across North America, very much leading the way in this market. And finally, a reminder that we've been running a light rail commuter operation in Denton, Texas since 2016, positioning us well in this marketplace. So let's move on to Greyhound. Firstly, I'm going to give you an update on the performance in the first half, and then I'm going to talk you through our recent strategic and operational review. I'll talk about the first half first. And now, as expected, and in line with the trends Greyhound experienced in the latter part of last year, like-for-like revenue fell by around 1% in this period. The long-haul business continues to be affected by airline competition, albeit this has been mitigated by higher recent activity around the immigration centres in the south. The higher pump price in the US has yet to have a significant impact on the business, neither by curtailing airline competition nor stimulating enough car drivers out of their cars in this period. And from an operational perspective, we've seen additional costs coming through the business, both from fuel, cost inflation, and also the cost of maintaining an older fleet. Now, this has resulted in a reduction of profitability in the first half, and margins falling to 2.8%. Now, you'll recall that Greyhound in Canada has been affected by the economic situation in the country, and ridership has dropped by 41% across Canada since 2010. and it's also a more regulated market with a higher cost structure. So we're pleased to have been able to execute a plan to stem our losses in Canada, and as a reminder, we lost around $10 million last year. So as of the 31st of October 2018, we have withdrawn from all routes in the west and central of Canada, apart from a very few routes near Vancouver, maintaining our presence in the east. And the rationale for staying in the east is due to the population density and the connection with a number of routes into the US. Now, this action allows us to immediately halve our losses in the country, with a path to at least break even in the medium term. Now, as you'd expect, there are some costs involved in taking this action, and I'll detail these later in the presentation. So moving on then to the future for this business. You'll recall in May, we announced the strategic and operational review of the Greyhound business. And this was in the face of increased low-cost airline competition in our long-haul market, competitive pressure in the Northeast, and the need to expand our dynamic pricing tools outside of the small express market. So stepping back for a second, the key questions that need answering were, is ultra-low-cost airline competition an existential threat to the intercity coach market? And would the business be more profitable if it only focused on the short-haul market, mainly around the east and west coast, reducing its infrastructure accordingly? So we've completed our analysis, and I draw the following conclusion. Whilst low-cost airline carriers will continue to be a challenge, there is a significant proportion of our marketplace where the only competition is the car. And focusing solely on the short-haul will not be enough to drive profitability or returns forward. And this is due to the override effect, where the same bus carries both long and short-haul passengers at different points in the same journey. And many passengers make multiple changes within our network, making it difficult to concentrate the infrastructure around specific routes. This is a complex network with around 190,000 connected city pairs. And therefore, we've concluded that our unique network does have value. And it's also worth noting that our long-haul business tends to be more profitable than our short due to the higher levels of competition and reduced barriers to entry in the short-haul market, particularly in the Northeast. So, I conclude that there's a clear, ongoing, attractive market for us, and we need to leverage our market position and network to derive profitability from this space. The solution is to drive pricing activity. And there is no doubt we have to accelerate higher pricing in certain parts of the network. We also have to continue to reduce costs to bring the business back to health. Now, at a more granular level, we have already begun to increase the intensity of our pricing activities to target routes based on competitive threat. This will be taken forward by a new commercial head. From a cost perspective, we're targeting the reduction of management layers, optimizing our brand structure, and also improving maintenance operations to drive down costs. We're already well underway with these activities, and we expect the business to return to at least mid-single-digit margins in the medium term. Now let me move on to the UK. Moving to First Bus. We've seen continued progress in this business, with like-for-like passenger revenue growing by 1.5%, maintaining last year's momentum. We're pleased to see that commercial passenger volumes grew by 0.7% and commercial revenue per mile is up 5%. We believe that our actions to improve the customer offering and also our focus on selective price increases has been instrumental in us growing at industry-leading levels. Being the first national bus operator to enable contactless payments on its entire fleet has helped bring our payments offering up to date and enhance the customer experience. Now, while we're pleased with the performance in this business, we recognise that the good weather over the summer will have had a positive impact on the propensity to travel. And also, whilst revenues have increased, overall volume fell by 0.6%, reflecting continued pressure from congestion and issues in the high street. So we will not allow ourselves to become complacent and will continue our focus on improving the customer experience. Margins have continued their positive momentum, with margins in the traditionally lower half of the year reaching 5.7%, 200 basis points ahead of last year. And we continue to move forward with actions to optimise the network, rationalise depot structure, introduce more efficient working practices, and integrate more functions into our shared service centre. Now these activities generated £10 million of savings in the first half. We continue to focus our investment where we have strong partnerships with local authorities. and working together we've been able to secure significant funding that helps us meet air quality targets and also participate in programs to improve congestion and support social mobility. Now, whilst there are uncertainties around demand within the industry, we remain confident in further progress being made to margins for the rest of the year. Now, in fact, we have been focused on margin restoration for the last couple of years, but we've also been focusing on ways to improve the customer experience. In terms of innovation, we're pleased to be launching 75 low-emission vehicles in time for the new Glasgow City-wide low-emission zone, which comes into effect in December. And by the way, these buses also have USB points, ELED seating and free Wi-Fi. We're running a variety of non-diesel buses, with 11 battery electric buses increasing to 30, running on our Park and Ride contract in York. And we also run biomethane buses in Bristol and hydrogen buses in Aberdeen. The business has been successful in securing funding for more than 500 retrofits for Euro 6 compliance. And all new buses that we've been buying have been Euro 6 compliant for a number of years. I've already talked about being the first regional bus operator to have contactless capability across the entire fleet, and not only does this modernise the customer experience, but by taking cash off the bus, we're also able to speed up journey time. And finally, we're also piloting a potential mobility as a service first mile, last mile concept in North Bristol with a third party since the spring of this year, and this gives us more understanding of this type of service and its potential. So let me move on to rail. As ever, the numbers are slightly complicated. Overall, rail revenue grew by 81% in the first half. This half we've had the full 6 periods of South West Rail, and last year we only had 4 weeks. And when this is removed, rail revenue grew by 18%, driven by continued growth in passenger revenue, but also the anticipated switch of Great Western from being a premium to a subsidy-based stock. It's probably easier to look at the like-for-like passenger revenue growth for each TOC. Great Western grew by 4.6%, demonstrating the impact of new Hitachi Intercity Express trains being progressively implemented on this railway. GPE's growth has moderated slightly to 9.4%, mainly due to the impact of late timetable change on other TOCs in the area, affecting our ability to provide the service. And South West Rail's passenger growth was 3.2%, an improvement on prior period performance, but still being affected by infrastructure issues and industrial action. Margins are down this year, with improvements in Great Western performance being offset by a loss being incurred in South West Rail this first half. South West Rail has been affected by issues regarding the network's performance in this period, which is being addressed by actions arising from the Holden review, and continued industrial action has been damaging, particularly to our customers' experience. In addition, we've had to make payments in accordance with revenue risk-sharing mechanisms. However, we continue to work hard with our industry partners to improve the network performance and our customers' experience, as well as introducing new trains to increase capacity. CPE has performed in line with the financial plan set out for the full year, and as a reminder, rail profit does not have any CPE impact within it. And going forward, we expect that the rail division will continue to train towards low single-digit margins, and we continue to play our part in this industry as a strong operator, in delivering the largest investment in capacity in the market for many years. Now, the clear focus in our rail business is the introduction of new capacity, with significant fleet introductions across the network. By the end of 2020, almost all of our passengers will be travelling on trains that are less than 5 years old. In Great Western, 93 Intercity Express trains started to enter service in 2017, with Hull trains we'll have 5 new Intercity Express trains in service in 2019. And TPE will be introducing 51 refreshed Class 185 trains before the full fleet of Nova trains arrive. And all of this investment will deliver multi-seat, Wi-Fi, power sockets, refitted toilets, air conditioning, and other improvements to the customer experience. Finally, you can see that we've introduced new ticket options for our South West Rail smart card users. And this launch is a card name. 10 tickets at a 5% discount, giving flexibility to part-time workers. And we've also launched auto-monthly renewal for season tickets, buy 11, get one free. And both of these are exclusively available to customers signed up to our South West Rail Touch smart card. So, having talked you through the divisional performance, let's go through the adjusting items that we're reporting this half. And I won't talk about amortisation, which always gets pulled out separately. The only significant item that we're pulling out to better explain the results of the business is the cost of restructuring in Greyhound. Our decision in July to formally withdraw from providing Greyhound services in Western Canada has crystallized certain closure costs, but will also generate a number of gains, specifically in relation to the sale of certain properties. The accounting standards require us to provide for all of the costs relating to closure, but we're not immediately able to accrue for profits that we expect to generate from selling properties. To this end, we put a chart at the bottom of the page. Now, the overall cost of closure are expected to be around £29 million, of which £9 million relates to a long lease of 50 years plus for one property in Winnipeg, and this is what's been accrued. But over time, we expect to generate around £10 million of profits from the sale of property. So a net cost in this half of £29 million, over time this will reduce to a cost of £19 million. But more importantly, the cash cost of closure is expected to be £25 million, and we expect to generate cash proceeds of around £19 million from the property sales. So that means overall cash cost of withdrawing from Canada is around £6 million. Now, this excludes any impact on pension, but we believe that there will not be a significant change to our pension cash flow over and above what's required through normal review. Now, the only other adjusting item to pull out relates to interest charges from the CPE provision, but to be clear, this is an accounting unwind. Our original provision remains unchanged. So let me now take you through the bottom half of the P&L. Interest costs are £8 million, or 14% lower than last year, mainly due to the start of the refinancing program, lowering average interest costs for the business. The tax rate has fallen from 30% to 22.5%, in line with our previous guidance. And as you know, this is all due to the US tax reform driving down federal tax rates. Now, we reiterate that our guidance for natural tax for this business is between 24% to 25%, but for this year, the tax rate will be around 23%. And as a reminder, the cash tax remains low, and will be a similar number to last year's £12 million. And a final reminder that with Southwest Rail, we have a minority partner, MTR, who owns 30% of the franchise. Taking all this into account, EPS has grown by more than 80% in constant currency, albeit off relatively small numbers. So let me move on now to the cash flow. Net cash inflow was £51 million, which compares favourably to last year's operational cash flow of £22 million. Remember, this excludes the £75 million of working capital that came in from Southwest Rail in last year's first half. Now, working from the left-hand side, you can see the cash capex is £192 million versus £194 million last year. There's more detail in the appendix, but it's worth pointing out the following. Looking at overall capex, you can see we've continued to invest in the business this year. Growth capex has increased versus last year by £64 million, reflecting the return to growth in students as flagged, continued investment in first class, and the need to recommence investment in the fleet with Greyhound. And we've also made a small acquisition in students this year. We continue to maintain our discipline around capital investment and have taken the decision to put some of our capital spend on the operating lease this year. This has generally been driven by our desire to have more flexibility around alternative fuel buses. And at this point, I reiterate our guidance for the year that we expect to invest between £350 and £360 million cash capex in our road business this year. And the final point I want to make with capex is that IFRS 16, the lease accounting standard, will be introduced to the first group for the 31st of March 2020 year end. And we'll be giving a more detailed update on this at the year end. I'm sure you'll all be looking forward to that. Coming back to cash, we've seen a large working capital increase, mainly due to the timing of rail receipts and payments. And as you know, given the size of our balance sheet and the complexity of our rail business, this can happen. These are a combination of timing relating to franchise payments on Great Western, as well as normal operating cash flow timing for Southwest Rail. And given that most of this is timing, I'm not upgrading our view of cash for the full year. Now, operating cash standards similar level to last year, and the conversion rate is 146%. I think it's worth pointing out that we have delivered cash in the first half for the second consecutive year after a six-year absence, and I'd reiterate that we have confidence that we'll generate significant cash for the full year. Now, I'd like to take a couple of slides before I close up to talk about our financial position and our balance sheet. Our financial position has improved, and remains strong, with headroom under our committed facilities being in excess of £700 million. The net debt to EBITDA ratio has improved from 1.7 times to 1.6 times at a headline basis, which is 2.2 times when rail ring-fenced cash is excluded. The long-term bond program remains in place, and average debt maturity is 4 years. Our ratings agency, Standard & Poor's and Fitch, have confirmed our investment grade status, and they currently have us at BBB- and stable. Last week, we're pleased to announce that we extended our RCF arrangement with our banker by a further 2 years, giving us security until November 2023. And we thank our banking syndicate for their confidence in the business and for the very smooth process that this was. Over 40% of our net debt is denominated in US dollars through US private placements and currency swaps, and 80% is at a fixed interest rate. So the financial position is strong and it's improving. And the second slide on the balance sheet relates to pensions. I think it's worth spending a little bit of time looking at the issue of pensions and making sure that everyone understands how our deficit is made up. Now you can see we have largely three pension areas. We've got the UK bus and grid scheme, we've got the legacy Greyhound scheme, and then we've got the rail scheme. Now we currently account for the rail scheme on the basis that the liabilities are handed back at the end of the franchise. The Greyhound schemes are handled under US and Canadian regulation, and we currently have agreed plans to bring these back into service over time. And it's the UK schemes that I really want to focus on. As you know, we took over pensions for the time of deregulation and the creation of the group, and it was only in March 2018 that we've been able to close the UK bus and group schemes for future accrual. The accounting deficit on these two schemes is £130 million. Now, we have a clear deficit reduction plan, and we fully agreed with the UK pension regulator and trustees a path to clear the deficit. And this results in us paying over nearly £22 million a year in deficit reduction payments to these two schemes. But there are two clear points that I want to draw out so that everyone's clear about our UK pension position. The first is that there is a difference between the way our accounting deficit and our funding or actuarial deficits are calculated. This results in a funding deficit around £200 million higher than the IAS accounting deficit. And it's this deficit, rather than the accounting deficit, that cash payments are based on. The second point is that both the UK bus and group scheme benefit from a first group guarantee. And this allows the funding deficit to be calculated with more protection. And this funding deficit is a lot lower than it would have been if we hadn't got the guarantee in place. Now, I've talked about this before, but I think it's important that we're clear about it as we focus intently on driving shareholder value. So, in summary, the first half trading has been encouraging, but I'm conscious of our waiting for the second half. There are challenges, but we maintain our view of the full year outlook. That's to say, broadly stable group operating earnings in constant currency. And I'm confident we'll generate significant cash flow for the full year, continuing our investment and deleveraging agenda. Let me close by summarising where we are. We have clear strategies in each of our businesses. Our biggest business is returning to growth. We can build on our market-leading position and margins to provide new innovative services to our customers, as well as augment this with bolt-on acquisitions. Transit continues to focus on growing in its core markets, improving operating performance and leading the way with new technologies. Greyhound is being problematic, but we have an improvement plan in place, and I'm focused on making sure that we deliver on this to restore this business to health. In First Bus, we have momentum now, and we continue to drive performance in both revenue and cost, pushing up margins to allow us to bring forward the solutions that will continue to attract more people onto our services. And in rail, it's all about working with our industry partners to deliver the operating performance that our customers expect, all the while ensuring that we appropriately balance risk and reward. We have market-leading positions in each of our sectors. The group is returning to growth, the road margins are improving, and the business will generate further cash. Now, in the first half of next year, we will host an investor event for you all to further expand on the opportunities that we see for each of our businesses. But until then, our immediate focus is on driving improved performance for our customers, our employees, and our shareholders. Now with that, I'll be happy to take any questions that you may have. back now. Who's got the mic? Probably wants to come through the question. Put your hands up and you'll ask a question, please.
Dominic Edwards from Olivia.
Hi, Dominic.
Just a few questions for myself. Apologies, some of them might be slightly technical.
Okay.
Firstly, can you just elaborate a little bit on the pricing in Judah? What's the levels? And also, have you talked about the inflation being above inflation?
Yeah.
Maybe talk about what sort of inflation levels you're looking at. Secondly, on the dividend.
Yeah.
Can you just maybe discuss some of the different elements there? Probably one area in that.
Individually. So coming back to pricing, apologies if I have to come back to some of these points, but coming back to pricing. Look, we have spent the last 4 years with our up or out strategy. We've been increasing pricing over and above inflation. Last year we hit 5.3%, and this year we have had a very good performance on pricing. We've taken the view that we, you know, whilst we've now restored the business to health and we've sort of we're continuing to be disciplined around pricing, but we're no longer in the period we were before. But it's not right to keep publishing those kind of numbers for our customers, effectively. We don't really want to be putting that forward in quite such an overt way. But what I can say is the pricing's been at least as good as it was last year. And perhaps I'll just leave it at that. In terms of inflation, we're seeing around 3% on average across the US. So again, that gives us comfort that you know, we are beating inflation, as I said during the presentation. Coming back to the dividend, look, we've said that we believe the First Group should be a dividend-paying stock, but as we reflected on our performance at the year end and that sort of continues through to the half year, we feel that there's better value for us to continue to continue our deleveraging agenda. I think the board obviously would take account of the statutory loss position, but you know, what we're more concerned about is sort of making sure that we continue to de-risk the group, and we think that's the best. But obviously we look at all of our metrics, and we look at all of the potential ways of measuring debt as well, because I think you can all come up with different ways of adding things in and taking things out. So it's not just about the headline number. I think coming on to on our restricted cash, look, I think we can probably get into detail afterwards, but in general terms, yes, the some of the working capital timing will have been contributing to that increase in restricted cash. And, you know, we don't sort of sit here and particularly forecast our restricted cash, but clearly we expect the rail business to be profitable going forward, and therefore over time we'll be able to sort of use that cash that's generated from the rail business. The restricted cash piece is quite difficult because it does really just depend on what's going on and the timing on every individual stock. Good. Thanks for that. Damien. Sorry.
Thank you. Damien Barone. First of all, can I just turn attention to UK Bus? It looks like your mileage still is down 4.5% of CapEx to revenues in H1 was about 3-4. You haven't said much about it beyond the investment, but what is the plan there? Because clearly you can't go on investing at 3-4% CapEx. Is it just slowly cutting network bit by bit, or is there a bigger strategy there, and if so, what is it? On the rail side, you look like you lost about 28 million in Trans-Pennine, or somewhere in the single digit millions in Southwest Rail. Given that, how much contingent debt, if any, you can contribute? Those franchises, and how does this come into your thinking in terms of, have you been interested in bidding, or just the industry just looking at the street risk? And then very finally, congratulations on that performing world that you put maybe. I think I've been this is my 21st set of numbers for the company. And I've heard promises of turnaround so many times before. What's the difference about this? What do you think will make the execution actually take place by turning the words into actual financial action?
Sure. Okay, well, I'll answer the first two questions. It's going to be time to think about the last one. Thank you. Okay, so in UK bus, I think it's difficult for the first half to sort of take any great sort of store from the numbers because it really depends on the timing of when we're putting new buses in. But what in terms of mileage, I don't think Nick can talk to you about it later on. I don't think mileage is quite down as much as that. But look, what have we said about the first bus? Firstly, we are looking to improve our customer offering to make the customer experience as easy and convenient as possible to encourage more people into the bus and use those services. And we think the long-term trends, when you look at congestion and you look at the environmental issues, people should be going more into the bus. Now, clearly, the industry hasn't demonstrated that in the short term, but we're seeing some positive signs. Our view is that we're looking at each of our individual businesses separately, so the issues and the medicine and the approach to each of those businesses is tailored to the local authority and the customers in that area. But we feel that improving the customer offering will increase patronage, will increase the revenue, and we look forward to continuing to grow over time. Now, obviously, we're cautious about that, but that is really the strategy, to continue improving the customer offering to allow us to grow. And we've said that we will invest in the areas where the local authorities are supportive of the bus, and that is where we'll be putting our focus. In terms of rail, and the guys in the front row will correct me if I'm wrong, I think we've invested around £12 million of contingent capital in TPE this year.
Yes.
And I think the answer to the next question is around bidding. We have said that we are always focused on a disciplined bidding process. We are considering, let me step back. We've got a very strong team in rail. We think we're very good at rail, despite some of the issues that the whole industry has had to face. We think we do a reasonable job at that. And we are focused on bidding for opportunities where we can see an appropriate balance between risk and reward. Okay? And you'll see, looking at our recent activity, we have put in a bid for the West Coast Mainline with our minority partner, Trenitalia, based on the fact that we see this isn't just a sort of run-of-the-mill franchise. There are a longer-term aspect in terms of the shadow operator for the HS2 elements of that as well. And we haven't bid for other franchises. So we'll take each bid on its own merits, but really be focusing on balancing the risk versus reward. And I think it's a very difficult conversation to have, because whilst there are lots of challenges around this business, I still sit here and say, we have made £300 million profit from our rail business in 5 years. We've generated cash in that business in the last 5 years, pretty much commensurate to that. So we are having to balance off the opportunities, our ability to deliver, and then also the risks and the challenges that we also face in the marketplace. And then on the final point, we've got, I'm glad that you've sat through 21 half years. Hopefully this is the one that will change your view. But I think, we have clear strategies for the business. I think you can see from the half year performance there is some momentum in some of our businesses. And we have said that again, which is why we've sort of laid out an element of caution and we're not running away with ourselves. But the difference for us is going to be driving each of these individual divisions to improve their profitability, improve their customer experience, and maximise the growth opportunities in their individual divisions. And I think we'll be giving the businesses the capability to do that and also holding them to account for that as well.
TPE was
20.7. Oh, yeah, sorry, just as a point, from a P&L perspective, the utilisation of TPE was 20.7 million. Gerald, thank you.
Three questions, please. Starting with essentially turning Damien's question the other way around. Can you just clarify on terms of the insurance companies for those, how much is left before you max out on both PPE and SWR? Certainly in the statement you talked about something in rail relating to the revenue share mechanism. I suspect that relates to central unemployment adjuster. Can you elaborate a bit more in terms of what's going on there, what the concerns are?
Yep.
You think that could be a rather persistent issue going into the rest of the franchise? And finally, on full year CapEx, you just clarify your 360, how that's affected by putting more buses on operating leases. Should I view that as an unchanged number, but the number we will see will be lower because of operating leases or
yeah. So let me do what I want first. I mean, that 350-360 is our cash capex, so the element of operating lease will be on top of that. That you would add rather than deduct from there. I think in terms of the specific questions on the parent or the PCS on the rail businesses, I mean, the reality is with Southwest Rail, we've got the entire PCS there because we haven't drawn anything down on that. The maximum exposure, I think, is in the back of the pack is around £90 million when you look at our 70% share. And on TPE, I mean, again, it's similar. You know, the maximum is around, the guys correct me if I'm wrong here, £190 million. And we can see that overall net we've drawn down about £17-18 million on that. So that says two things. One is we haven't drawn lots of it down in cash. And the other thing is that, you know, despite, you know, people's views on this business, there is a sort of finite, calculable worst case. Now, again, we're not working to that worst case. We're pushing to try and improve the performance, but at least there's something very clear there. And then going back to the rail, the risk-sharing mechanism. So in, 2013, the Brown Review suggested that the franchising environment ought to better share risk and reward and decided to it recommended some changes there. In the Southwest Rail franchise, we talked to you and we told you that we thought the risk-sharing mechanisms were far better than those that we've seen in the past, particularly in Trans-Pennine, and that Southwest Rail franchise introduced GDP protection and CLE protection. And Central London Employment is a statistic which attempts to measure the level of employment in specific boroughs that Southwest Rail goes into. And all of this is intended to share the risk so that if there was a huge surge in employment and lots of passengers going onto the train, and we saw that, then the government would sort of partake in some of that. But if there was a downturn, then we would get some protection. What we've seen in the first couple of periods, and you know, we've only been running this for a year, is that whilst the statistics show us that CLE is increasing, we are not seeing that. That's not our experience on the actual railway. And that's affected by other things. You know, it's affected by industrial action. It's affected by the infrastructure issues we've got. So we're sort of flagging that as an issue, and as we do on many other things with all franchises, we're having conversations about that. We'll update if there's anything further to say on that.
Congratulations, Matthew, on the appointment. World-class, must be a tough boss, not to have done it sooner and a half, but there we are. A couple of questions for me, actually. You also mentioned about the timetable impact of the winter on the three franchises, given how successful the timetables were elsewhere in May. Can you give us an indication of the kind of the magnitude of the potential impact there? Also, would it be naive to think it's as straightforward as you saying we were going to do these and we were going to do them brilliantly, you're now not allowing us, therefore here is the compensation due or commercial change needed? And then secondly, just on SWR, obviously you've had a loss in the first half. Can you give us an indication of what you think the profile of that business will be? What kind of things need to happen to get to break even? Is there, what kind of levers that you have left to pull?
Okay, well, thank you. And I'm happy to talk about rail, although obviously I want to focus again on the good performance in
some of our bigger businesses. But no, you're right to raise some of these issues. So on the timetable change, it's not naive to think that we would go back and ask to be compensated for the changes. I mean, we put forward a bid, a very detailed bid, based on loads of things we're going to do, and that will drive the business forward, it will generate the growth, increase the capacity, all these good things for the customer. If, for whatever reason, the government decides it doesn't want to make those timetable changes, then we're absolutely within the franchise and contractual rights to have a discussion with them about that. So I don't think it's naive to say that. It's not really right to scale it, because, you know, as you can imagine, the entire industry is having to work through this issue. So there's actually quite a lot of Excel spreadsheets working at the moment to try and work all this out. But I can say that we would expect to be compensated, and it's unfortunate, but we'd expect, you know, not to suffer because of that. I think in the South of Israel, what do we need to do? Well, I suppose we need to work, as the Holden Review has suggested, to improve the infrastructure and the operational performance, and there is a number of recommendations that we're working through with Network Rail and DfT on improving the resilience of the infrastructure, which will improve the operational performance. And then we need to the best of our ability, improve the service and introduce the trains that we want to. I mean, the trains are going to come on, are on order, and, you know, will arrive. And, you know, we're not going to sit here and say, well, you know, we can't put them in because of the timetable. We're going to work, as we have done in other franchises, to find as many solutions to improve the situation. So in terms of, you know, how will we make South West Rail a success, will be improving the operational performance and delivering the capacity to the best of our ability as much as we're allowed to. I'm going to come back to Joe.
Good morning, it's James Wallace from HSBC. You talked about pensions, Matthew.
Yeah.
And the guarantee that comes from the increased money part and how the pension deficit or the money deficit could increase where that structure also exists. Is there any sort of colour or context you can put in that?
I think the context is that, you know, we've said that we're continuing to review all of our options and we're continuing to review the business. And I want to be very clear that, you know, there are some structural issues around some of the options that we might have been considering. And really, I just want to be absolutely clear to people that, you know, as the group stands today, we have a very clear and agreed mechanism for dealing with our pension deficits, and we take that responsibility very seriously. But what I just want people to understand that if we decided and if we felt it was right to do other structural things for the group, then we would have to take that into account. Now, I can't tell you how much that would be or what it would be, that there are, you know, a lot of assumptions and stuff that go into it, but it's important that everybody understands that these are complex issues.
And the UK budget,
yeah.
But it's still saying that there's quite a lot of hatching hatching around the country, by the sounding of it. We've sort of heard slightly more positive noise coming out from some of the other operators recently.
Mm.
Just wondering if you could, give another answer as to which areas are still being weakened and which ones are perhaps better.
Sure. I mean, we don't want to go into the detail of particular areas because obviously that's commercially sensitive to us. But I think it's fair to say that our southern businesses are performing much better than the ones in the north of the UK and Scotland.
And anything that's a demand issue rather than a competition issue?
Look, it's less so much a competition issue. It's more of a it's just very specific to the individual area. So it will be down to whether there's particular congestion, particular economic environments in certain areas. So it is very specific to issues. But I think, look, what we're trying to say is that we've seen some good growth last year. We're showing growth, like revenue growth for this half. But we're not getting carried away. We recognise that, you know, we can't exactly quantify what the weather effect would be. But I don't want people to be sitting there saying, we've got 1.5%, off we go, it's going to be more and more. I just want to make sure that we, you know, continue to work to improve the service and we'll see as we go through the second half how that really develops.
Thanks. And just finally on school buses, the 3% inflation talks about the history, talks about wage inflation.
That's right.
How are you seeing that developing, especially concerned in light of the Amazon wage increase going through?
Yeah.
And of course, the difficult market environment, the tight labor market generally in the US. Do you still think there's a risk that goes up further?
Yeah, there is a risk, and we're not seeing any abating of the inflation. I think Amazon, those kind of noises will be an issue for us, but that will obviously depend on where the specific operations are. I mean, our student business, we do come back to a big part of our business is very specific to people who want to work in a specific kind of way, 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon. But no, I think you raise a valid point. There's potential for higher inflation there, and it really depends on how that whole US economy does go in the future. You read different versions of what the outlook's going to be. Our take is we've got ourselves into a position where we're renewing each of our contracts pretty much a third every year. We've got stronger than inflation price increases. And look, I think I responded before that we didn't really want to effectively rub our customers' nose in it in this issue. But if it got to the stage where we had to put more in, then we would do that. And that's a good element of our pricing discipline. Any other questions? Hi.
Sorry, quick question on the UK, US student operations. Can you talk a little bit about your going forward, your growth mechanism as you think about it? The tension in the future, I know you said you don't want to talk about prices, you talk about volumes, and what are the targets you're setting for yourself for that business? And also separately, I have a more question. On your debt that you're obviously paying at a fixed or slightly higher rate, what would be the cost if you try to refinance it today? What would be the fees that you'll have to pay?
Yeah. Okay, well, look, on that point, it would still be in the tens of millions of pounds that we'd have to pay to escape ourselves from, particularly the longer-term ones. So it's still a significant amount of cash that would be going out of the business. So although it would be, you could come up with some kind of calculation that says it's NPV neutral to some extent, slightly negative, we just don't think that's a good use of our cash. You know, we've got cash coming in the business. Everyone understands it, and that we're comfortable with that. I think on the group, I don't want to sort of anticipate what we might say next year in terms of, outlining where we are with where we are with the businesses. But I think it's fair to say that from an organic perspective in students, you'd expect sort of low single-digit organic growth potentially. Now that we've got the bus count stabilised, you'd expect to get some growth from share shift potentially. And then it's about these bolt-on acquisitions that we're looking to increase the pipeline. But to be honest, I don't want to get tied down to a particular target at this stage, if that's okay. Great. Good. Any other questions? There we go. Sorry, didn't see that.
Hi, Matthew.
Hi.
Also, Ken, congratulations from my side. Two accounting questions. The first one relates to...